You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares. Hello, welcome to the show. This is the episode for Monday, the 11th of March, 2024, recording on Sunday evening, giving you tomorrow's news today as I have to head very early to Cheltenham first thing Monday to take part in Liddy Hislop and Ruby Walsh's Road to Cheltenham show on Racing TV. Much to discuss then through the next 40, 45 minutes or so, and we'll be getting stuck into some of the big races with declarations now known, as you would anticipate. We will be asking why Willie Mullins has declared so many runners in a hood, that pacifying piece of headgear, and indeed so many high-profile runners in a first-time hood, including Mystical Power and Gaelic Warrior. Our old friend Joe Chambers joins the show because Susanna and Rich Ritchie have a number of interesting runners, including Gaelic Warrior and a share in Mystical Power on the opening day, and of course Lossy Mouth, who's a hot favourite for the Mayor's Hurdle, and we'll be cantering through a few of their key contenders for the week. Plus, I'll be asking Joe about the hood situation. What's it like being a part owner of one of the hottest favourites of the week? A few weeks ago, we spoke to co-owner of Ballyburn, a hot pot for Wednesday's Gallagher Novices Hurdle, at David Manassa. As time's gone on, his nerves have only intensified, and he talks about an intriguing rivalry with someone he knows very well in business. His business as a football agent at Brighton Supremo, Tony Bloom. They lock horns in that race, and David shares some fascinating insight. What chance have some of those medium to larger sized British stables got? Well, Nigel Twiston Davis has as good a string as he's had for a little while going to the Cheltenham Festival. His son Sam will be riding many of those, and Sam joins us with a fair degree of hope and optimism later in the programme. But really, if you think there is a British challenge to Willie Mullins, Gordon Elliott, Henry de Bromhead, Gavin Cromwell et al., it should, on all known evidence, come in the shape of Nicky Henderson, the most successful British-based Cheltenham Festival trainer of all time, a man who has 9 champion hurdles under his belt, who's suffered his fair share of knocks over the last few days with news of Constitution Hill's defection. And the nerves only got worse for people at Seven Barrows yesterday when Sergino, the hot favourite for the Triumph Hurdle, took a marked drift on the betting exchanges. Betting was suspended by some bookmakers, then reopened, then his price contracted again. All seemed okay. But are these rumours at all well-founded? I spoke to the master of Seven Barrows on my Luck on Sunday show on Racing TV on Sunday morning, and I asked him how Sergino was before going on to talk about the health of the string as a whole. This is what he had to say.
He was in great form yesterday morning. I don't know where this has come from. I really don't. It's just one of those things that they love to throw at you just to test your mental agility, I think. It's crazy. He was in great. Dan rides him every day. He was thrilled with him yesterday. Schooled on Thursday. You won't see anything slicker. He had a nice piece last bit that he's going to do. He doesn't run till Friday, so some of these horses are on different projects, like different days. He was in great form yesterday morning. He's going to have a quiet exercise now. They're just about pulling out. And he is 100%. I promise you, 100%.
So nothing wrong with Sergino, according to Nicky Henderson. I did say to him the form of the yard was a concern. And if he were to be the poster boy for the home guard, if you like, against the all-powerful access that I was talking about, could he reassure punters as to the health of his string?
Well, I can to a point, because we scoped all Tuesday's runners, 7 of them, on Friday. And every single one came back with a 100% clean bill, literally 100%. So that was most encouraging. We have been getting one or two with dirty scopes, as you know. But everything that runs, all 7 that we did on Friday, that run on Tuesday, were 100% clean, healthy, good pair of lungs, all ready to blow.
Nicky Henderson there, not only giving people full confidence in Sergino for the Triumph Hurdle on Friday, but also issuing a positive bill of health for most of his team. Something, David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror, that an awful lot of people will be reassured by, I would imagine.
Well, there's been an awful lot of conjecture, hasn't there, Nick, over the last week about and beyond about the state of health of the Nicky Henson horses. I think lots of people put two and two together, and I'm not quite sure what they came up with. Let's deal with Sugino first. He drifted out to about 5-1 on betting exchanges on Saturday evening. Obviously, he was the odds-on favourite for the Triumph Hurdle at the start of trading on Saturday. By the time we got round to sunrise on Sunday morning, he'd pretty much settled down again. I think you can still get a little bit of odds against. We spoke to plenty of bookmakers over the weekend as to whether they were going to field against Seven Barrows during the festival. And I think Tuesday is a really pivotal day. Jericho du Repenay is obviously a high-profile horse in the Supreme Novices, a race in which Nicky Henson has done extremely well. And going on to the feature race, the Champion Hurdle at 3:30 on Tuesday, Iberico Lord on the figures has got a bit to do, but we know that he's an upwardly mobile horse. And crucially, we know that he'll have his conditions. That was why he was supplemented for the Champion Hurdle last week, because JP McManus and Nicky Henson felt that by the time we get to the County Hurdle on Friday, the ground might have dried out a bit. So it's Tuesday is a very interesting day for Nicky Henson. And just finally, before we move on from Seven Barrows, just I think one thing is worth pointing out. The last 2 weeks, obviously, we've had those eight runners, of which only one, that was Spring Note at Newbury last Saturday, actually won. Much has been made, however, of the fact that Nicky Henson hasn't had a runner in the last week. And I'm just going to read you the meetings from Sunday onwards, last Sunday onwards. Sunday, Doncaster and Huntingdon. Monday, Plumpton and Southall. Tuesday, Lingfield Park and Newcastle. Wednesday, Catterick Bridge. Thursday, Carlisle and Wincanton. Friday, Ayr, Exeter and Leicester. And then yesterday, Saturday, Ayr, Hereford and Sandown. Now, Sandown apart, when one would have expected Nicky Henson to have a few runners, I don't think too many of those tracks, especially when the ground is heavy, I don't think too many of those would have been natural places for Henderson to send his horses. So maybe that bit about the lack of runners over the past week, perhaps we shouldn't have expected that many in the first place. But as I say, Tuesday, a really big day for Nicky Henderson and Seven Barrow.
Okay, while we are in the business of reading out exhaustive lists, I've got an even more exhaustive one, and that is of Willie Mullins runners on Tuesday and the headgear that they're wearing, okay? So in the Supreme Novices Hurdle, Mystical Power, hood for the first time. Mr. Giff, hood for the first time. No hoods for Tully Hill, the favourite, Asian Master, Gold Dance or Super Sunday. Hood for the first time, Gaelic Warrior in the Arkle. Hood, well, he already had one, Il Était Temps. No hood for Hunter's Yarn. Hood for Meeting of the Waters in the Ultima. He already had one. No hoods for State Man and Zarak the Brave, nor for Lossy Mouth in the Mayor's Hurdle. There is a hood for the first time for second favourite Ashro Diamond, and hoods already for Echoes in Rain and Gallimarso. In the Boodles, Batman Girac has a hood, but had one anyway. Miss Manzor doesn't, and nor does Carrier Egg Blaze. And Embassy Gardens, who is right up there as favourite or nearly favourite in the, well, surely soon to be defunct National Hunt Chase, more of which later, has a hood for the first time already. So what is Mullins up to here, putting hoods on so many of these horses and so many high-profile ones for the first time, when many people in the sport, David Yates, will tell you that a hood has a becalming effect on a horse? But clearly it's a piece of headgear he likes. Of course, you'll remember Willie Mullins was always a big fan of earplugs before people even used hoods.
Yeah, that was definitely an exhaustive list of yours. The truth of this, Matt, I really have absolutely no idea. If the application of a hood turns Gaelic Warrior into the winner of the Arkle Challenge Trophy, Nick, then the word genius, it's been bandied about over the decades with reference to racehorse trainers, including Willie Mullins. But if if he puts, he's going to put the hood on Gaelic Warrior, and if as a result that helps that horse win the Arkle, which I cannot possibly see, then finally the word genius in relation to a racehorse trainer will be fully justified, because that's something that I really can't see happening.
All right, okay, let me just pick you up on that then. Surely best horse in race, run really well at two festivals in the past. Why can't he win? I mean, the margins are quite fine, and surely just a little bit of fine tuning could easily see him put his best foot forward.
Well, I just think he'll have to completely leave behind what he did, particularly just in terms of jumping out to his right at Leopardstown last time. I just thought the wheels came off in really spectacular form that day. He's coming back to 2 miles. I think this doesn't look... Now, it sounds like I'm backtracking now. I don't think this is a vintage Arkle, but I think it's of a good enough standard that Gaelic Warrior ought to struggle to win it. The likes of Founder 50, who you could set your clocks by, I don't think he's a superstar, but I think we can pretty much guarantee what he's going to do. But Gaelic Warrior, I can't see. I've been wrong before.
Mm-hmm. I suspect you might be again. Joe Chambers, our old friend, of course, he's been on to talk about Susanna Ritchie owned horses, Rich Ritchie owned horses. And I begin by talking to him about the hood and how Gaelic Warrior might attack Tuesday's big novice chase.
The thinking behind the hood is that he worked in school in it earlier in the week, and apparently went very well and very straight. So Willie called yesterday morning and said that he was very happy to do so. Now, this hood expedition that he's going on with 9 of them on that day, and I'm sure there'll be many more during the week, I have absolutely no idea where the grounding in this thesis is, but it seems to be this year's new venture.
And Joe, I wouldn't be so disrespectful as to call this a fad, but are you familiar with this sort of exercise from Willie Mullins previously, where he will use a certain type of headgear or a certain type of equipment in blanket fashion like this as a result of an experiment or pieces of work that have been done in the lead up to a big festival?
No, if anything, he strips everything back. I mean, if you look at Monkfish, he just goes in a bare bridle and always has. He's the most simple, he's probably the horse with the least amount of headgear. And in my experience, and I think public opinion and stats should back this up, over the last 15, 20 years, Willie's probably the last trainer that heads for headgear. He famously said one night when he was asked to put cheek pieces on a horse that he told the jockey to just get fitter and get it back in the gym. I have no idea, but his instinct is normally correct, and he's clearly got something in his head as to how he wants to approach the next 4 days with certain horses.
And as for the tactics with Gaelic Warrior, Joe, how do you think you'll play it?
I think he'd probably rock and roll, but as you know, I've been keen for him to go to Fairy House, but I'll shut up reminding people of that. I think there's probably no other way to let him go over 2 miles but rock and roll, and I don't know if the hood will curb the best of him or if it'll actually not hinder it and kind of help negate the worst of him, so to speak. So I think on natural ability, he's going to have a hell of a chance. Does a run to 155, something like that, probably put you near the top of the podium? It probably does. Is he capable of doing so? Yeah, I think so. So if Willie's instinct is right and he's able to curb his wayward tendencies by the use of a hood, well, it should be very interesting indeed.
And just dealing with this first day, Lossy Mouth, obviously the other one, very short price favourite for the Mayor's Hurdle. It's been talked of for weeks as though all she has to do is turn up. When you look at all these races, obviously you start to see dangers and things that maybe you didn't see before. Do you still believe her task is, relatively speaking, I mean, no task is easy at Cheltenham, but relatively speaking, a straightforward one?
Look, she's the best bullet we're going to fire all week. Deeply impressed with what she did in January, not just on the track, but also how she looked and physically developed as well. I, purely from a breeding point of view, and I guess to a lesser extent from a racing point of view, always been a little bit worried about her ability to get further than 2 miles. But I take an awful lot of comfort in the unwavering confidence and belief from the Kilsutton camp, and that's all of them there. They're quite unified in this regard, that she would have no trouble with the extra 4.5-5 furlongs in trip, and she's obviously a bit more mature and she relaxed an awful lot better even in a slow pace from Hall in January. So I take an awful lot of heart from there for all that. There is probably a little bit of a niggle in the back of my head in that regard.
All right, that was Joe Chambers, racing manager to Susanna and Rich Ritchie. He's a regular on this podcast, but he had some quite interesting things to say. Clearly feels that Willie Mullins has done a bit of work in hoods with most of these horses, and I think they'll let Gaelic Warrior bowl along, stride on, and try and completely dominate this field. How many winners then for Mullins on day one, do you think? 6 in the opener, 3 in the Arkell, big, big hope in the ultimate, 2 in the Champion Hurdle, including the long odds on favourite in the mares, favourite in the last, and 3 with chances in the Boodles.
Yeah, it's very interesting this. I've been talking to several colleagues on Sunday about how many Marlins horses are you going to tip on the opening day of Cheltenham 2024. I've come up with 4, Nick, and they are Tully Hill, State Man, Lottie Mouth and Embassy Gardens. Now, of course, 2 of those are odds on favourites already. It would be the shock of the week, wouldn't it? If State Man were beaten on Tuesday, he's 5-2 on. It wouldn't be the shock of the week if Lottie Mouth were, but it would still be a turn up, let's put it that way. But yeah, I think probably 3 or 4 would be the likely number of Mullins winners on the opening day. If it were 5, then that really does spell bad news for everybody else, doesn't it? But I've gone for 4.
Well, of course, we actually got the news in pretty good time in the end that Ballyburn was going to take up the option of the Gallagher Novices Hurdle on Wednesday. That means that co-owner David Manasseh, who's having his first experience of ownership with Willie Mullins, though not his first experience of ownership, far from it, has had to wait another day, which, given the way he was talking when we spoke a few weeks ago, must be complete agony. Still, he's agreed to talk to me again. Right, David, an extra day to wait. How does that feel?
Actually, probably better, because I entertain people for 2 days. I have a box at Cheltenham, so I can enjoy the first day with everyone and just deal with the second day when it comes. But I've never had an experience like this, but I now know how the family of a footballer feel when they win, say, the Champions League semi-final, and you've got to wait a month to the final, and you've got 4 or 5 games in between, and you just hope there's no injury. I actually haven't spoken to Willie Mullins since Dublin Racing Festival, because there's nothing to tell me unless there's bad news, I suppose. So I'll see him on the Wednesday and he'll tell me what he thinks.
So you've just been following it along with all of the rest of us and all the speculation, just kind of enjoying the ride semi-detached?
Yes, just reading Twitter every day, and I think I probably hit Odds Checker and Betfair every day, and that just tells me everything anyway. So we just go there, and now we're in on the Wednesday. The second favourite's owned by Tony Bloom. We've had our few tussles over the years with agent and owner of football club, and now we've got our tussle at Cheltenham.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about your dealings with Tony in your professional life. Obviously, as you say, you're an agent, and he owns Brighton and has done fabulously well with them.
Yeah. Yeah, so I manage about 6 of the current Brighton football team. So we're often in negotiations and hard talks over footballers. Now we're there as first and second favourite on Wednesday. I don't think he was too happy when I texted him and said we're running on Wednesdays. He did ask me why we've changed rates.
Tony's getting more stuck into racing, even more than he is now, he announced the other day, and especially with this flat project. What sort of character is he to do business with?
No, he's a good guy. Very clever guy. Very clever in football. And he seems to be very clever in horse racing as well. So, whatever he seems to do, he sets out his stall, probably employs the best people, and he gets good results from it.
And how many top-level footballers have you got on your books at the moment?
Oof, we do have a lot of players.
more than you can probably count.
More than I can count, but we have a very good team that manages the whole operation.
Okay, and so where I was going with this was, to what extent are they at all interested/engaged in
the current preoccupation of their agent?
Right, so I don't ever talk horses to these footballers, but I now know which ones do because certain players have picked up that I own this horse for the last 2 months. So I now know which ones actually do follow the horse racing and which ones don't. And there's one or two that have been ringing me every day, which race is it running in? And I keep telling them, I don't know myself. I've just left this all to Willie to decide. And I think that's the best way you do it. Right. I'm only a small, I have two horses in racing, and what am I going to tell Willie Mullins? Willie's got to tell me what to do.
Where is the other one at the moment?
The other one is with Willie. Mm-hmm. I have a younger horse, but I did have a horse with Willie before, MC Muldoon, which just got beat at Royal Ascot by a 66-1 shot that William Buick hit 16 times, but the whip rules didn't count in those days.
Ah, yes. Okay, we can't look back. We can only look forward. And
look forward.
And there's an awful lot of people who have been heavily invested in Ballyburn for an awful long time, if not quite as long as you. It sounds like this has been an amazing ride already so far.
Very exciting. There's been a lot of hype. It's not come from me. So I just sit there and keep reading what I'm reading. But obviously the horse has got a lot of ability, but it's now got to go and do it on the big stage.
And can you dispassionately assess the race and sort of try and work out whether he's got a better chance here than he would have had in the 2 mile race, or are you just trying to shut all that surround sound out?
I actually just spoke to my father and I said, he said Slade Steel could win the Supreme. And I said to him, well, if it wins the Supreme, does that mean we've chosen the wrong race? So I think, listen, you go there, you're in the hands of the best man. He's decided where it goes. We just got to get on with it and enjoy the day.
David, much appreciate your time. Best of luck this week.
No problem. Thank you very much, Nick. Cheers.
Yeah, David Manasseh there. And good stuff. And if Tuesday is going to be Super Tuesday for Mullins, then it's going to be Willie Wednesday, surely, with Ballyburn, El Fabiolo and Facts to File. David, have they made the right call with Ballyburn, do you think? Irrespective of how many other bullets this yard has to fire, is this the most suitable target for this horse at this time? And yeah. would he have just won anything?
Yeah, well, he may very well have won the Supreme, but if you're asking me which race I feel is more suitable, then I would definitely have said the Gallagher's. I think what he did at Leopardstown over 2 miles in the Goffs race, I think it surprised a few people. He looked really relentless over 2 miles. He looked capable of producing a grade one performance at 2 miles, which obviously is what he did. He looked really relentless at that distance. And if you factored in the soft ground round Cheltenham and powering up that hill, you really could see him coming away from the field in the Supreme Novices. But all that said, would one have thought that all those observations would apply to the Gallagher's over 2.5? Well, yes, I think it would. And I think that just he'll be completely in his comfort zone in the intermediate race. And I think, you know, you and I were talking on Friday and you were saying, well, let's face it, there's been lots of public conjecture about this, but the trainer was always pretty clear that it was the Gallagher's that he was going to go for. And I think you were right in saying that, and I think it's the correct call from Mullins. You know, as you say, it completely irrespective of how he might choose to move his tiles around the board, looking at this in isolation, which race, the 2 or the 2.5 miler, would be the suitable one for Ballyburn. I think it's Wednesday's race.
Should we talk about the weather? Because it's going to start dampish, isn't it? It's been raining today. They're going soft predominantly. There's going to be rain Tuesday. And the rest of the week is unsettled, though every forecast seems to agree that it's going to warm up. And it might be a little bit better towards the end of the week than it is at the beginning of the week.
I'll be very interested to see what it's like for the Thursday and the Friday, Nick. I think that we're agreed that as far as we know, it's going to start on soft ground on Tuesday and there'll still be a fair bit of dig on Wednesday. Certainly with races like the Ryanair, And I'm thinking of Banbridge. He's a horse that I think we all acknowledge needs decent ground to be at his best. The Gold Cup would certainly be a different race on good ground compared to soft ground, wouldn't it? The case has been made that Galopin des Champs would be a better horse on soft ground than if it were genuinely good ground. It's not been made by me, but it's been made. Obviously, a horse like Hewick, we know as a lively outsider and a very good human interest story, a good drying ground would certainly suit him. So, yeah, it's obviously going to start on soft, but the forecast for the second half of the meeting is a bit is unhelpful. It's dry or dry-ish. And warmer, but sort of not exactly blazing sunshine that we would expect to dry the terrain. So I'd be interested to see that how that works out, because I think that in terms of looking at it from a tipping perspective, it's hard to say at the moment, for example, which horses are going to have conditions to suit them on Friday in the feature races.
Okay, so what we do know is yes, it'll dry. But it's not going to take much to turn it back again, you wouldn't have thought.
That's very true. Although it's a phrase that people use an awful lot, and I've stopped using it now because I'm happy enough to admit that I don't know what the hell it means. And that is the phrase water table. I heard Ruby Walsh talking about it on a broadcast a few weeks ago, and I thought I've given up with the water table because I've bored people about it with it before, pretending I know what it means. But like you say, the idea is, I think, that it rains so much that the water table means there's still more residual moisture in the ground than there would normally be. But then when the sun comes out, it still seems to dry. So,
do you want to know what the water table is?
Yeah, go on. Have you got an exhaustive definition?
Yeah, it's the boundary between the unsaturated zone and the saturated zone underground. Below the water table, groundwater fills any spaces between sediments and within rock.
Right, that clears it up.
Okay, thought you might be reassured by that. All right, who's sliding under the radar on the first couple of days of the Cheltenham Festival? Well, maybe, just maybe, Sam Twist and Davis, because a closer look reveals there's some very interesting chances here, as indeed there are for the whole stable during the course of the week. And he's with me now. I got the feeling, talking to your brother and to Nigel the other day, Sam, that there was a little bit of quiet confidence in the camp. Is that, do you share that?
I guess so. It's obviously, Cheltenham's a local track to us, and it's one we target quite strongly throughout the season. So we've got some horses now. We've all been caught, had his excuses early, Matata, Master Chewy, later on in the week, Gardner Dreams. Like, they're horses that are, they're good horses in our stable, you know, and we've got hopes them all running well.
I saw that you were on Matata and Tom Bellamy was on Master Chewy. Did you have the choice?
No, it was always a tricky one for Dad, as obviously lucky to have two in that. But with Daryl siding with Hunter's Yarn, Matata just takes some knowing, and he was quite keen on, I know him well, he was quite keen on just to make sure I rode him, and the Shepherds very kindly. Obviously, Tom Bellamy knows Master Chewy well as well.
And we've all been caught to a horse who, you know, you've always had the world of time for. Are we now finding ourselves in a position where he's in fact quite a well-handicapped horse in the right sort of race in the Ultima?
Well, we really hope so. He came back with a dodgy heart after his last start. So he's been to Newmarket, had it looked at, everything done as properly as we can. He seems very fit and well. His schooling has been good. So hopefully we'll see more like the horse we hoped we had at the start of the season.
And I'm intrigued to know whether I can get anything out of you as regards this Boodles project, Les Loyautés. I was struggling to get any blood out of the Willie Twist and Davis stone the other day on this one. Is she any good?
She goes okay. Obviously, she hasn't had the world of time to acclimatise, but what she is very straightforward. She jumps well. She's a four-year-old jumping fences in France, so hopefully our jumping won't let her down. But obviously, big field, and there'll probably end up being some better handicap ones in there. But she has a good attitude, and she will win some of those fillies races going forward.
And as you know full well, sometimes the handicapper really has no clue. They can do their best with the French form, but suddenly horses can either come alive when they come here, or they take a little while to get going.
Yeah, very much so. I think she'll fall into that category. She'd work with similar horses to her rating at home without blowing them away. But she was bought, obviously, to breed from it in time and hopefully win a few races along the way.
Now, I have heard a number of people today tell me that Broadway Boy's got a good chance in the Brown Advisory. It's a race the stable has won more than once before. How fond are you of this horse's chance?
Yeah, what he is the best way to sum him up. He's incredibly straightforward. He's a great attitude, and he's got Cheltenham form. End of the day, Factor File looks incredibly good, but you know with Broadway Boy what you're going to get. He's going to jump out. He's going to give it a bloody good go, and safe and sound, hopefully, he'll run a big race and obviously give David Prue's, Willie, Dad, and everyone something to cheer for. But as the opposition, they do look very good, but you know with him, he's a gritty stare. He's going to give it his very best.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, these colours have been around for years. It would be great to see them back in a winner's enclosure on the biggest stage of all. I note that Paul Nicholls, your old governor, is going to run Stay Away Faye in cheek pieces, suggesting they're going to get on with it with him as well. Do you think this could be a proper war, this race?
Yeah, I thought he was potentially, obviously, a very dangerous opponent. Just more so through riding with him in the Cotswold Chase on the Real Whacker, because he loomed up sides that day looking incredibly dangerous just before kind of the Real Whacker went forward, finished second, and he was still a very good third in what is a very open grade two, you know, and I'm sure that experience will do him the world of good, and he's now got a bit of course form as well. So I think it's one of those that he does look very good and could be, well, one of the ones to beat along with Factor Fire.
Mm. Cuthbert Dibble surely want to get very close in the Potemps, isn't he?
Hope so. He's on an upward curve. Didn't give him the best rides in last year's EBF final. He then won his novice, and he's looked pretty good in his last two. So he's fresh and well. He's going in the right direction. And if there's ever maybe a graded horse starting to sneak into a handicap, we're kind of dreaming maybe it could be him.
It's a bit of a motif, that, though, isn't it? There's a lot of horses that you're running in handicaps that you sort of thought might be on the cusp of graded company. You know, we talked about We've All Been Caught, him, Hidalgo Bio, I guess, would be another one.
Yeah, some of ours are doing it the other way around. So we've tried them quite highly in graded company and then dropping them back down, the likes of Guard Your Dreams and such. And so we're hoping they run well through just actually almost dropping in class slightly. Whereas then with Cuthbert, you're hoping that maybe he's the one that could be slightly better in time. But, you know, yourself at Potemps is never easy, easy race to win.
Now, the Real Whacker in the Gold Cup. Could he?
It's a funny one, really, because when he won the Brown Advisory last year, I just thought World would be our oyster all the way through. So every time I've got off and Paddy got off to Paddy Neville, he kind of like had a little smile on his face. Not so much after the Paddy Power, but when he was fourth in the King George, I was like, well, hope for maybe a little bit better. And then I got off him the Cotswold Chase. And he just looked really happy. And I said, Paddy, what do you think? And he was like, he generally thought that was perfect, and that was now the last step along the way to the race he's had him hopefully planned out all the way through. So I'm very much hoping Paddy's had this plan all the way through. He's really happy with the horse. He's been schooling and working well, and now we've just got to keep our fingers crossed for a massive run.
Just sum up how you're feeling now with 36 hours to go.
It's a tricky one, really, because like, you always look forward to it. But I was lucky last year to obviously have had a winner. But it just makes you incredibly hungry for more. And you just put yourself in a very dangerous position of being looking forward to excited. But then at the same point, you leave yourself incredibly disappointed at the end of the week if you don't nick one. But that is what makes our sport great, is that it can do such things to your emotions.
And it's great, isn't it? You have that counterpoint, don't you, between trying to work out whether Willie Mullins is going to have 5, 10, 15, 20 winners during the week. And then you hear from Sam Twiss and Davis, who's got, you know, ostensibly quite a good book of quite interesting rides. But you realise just how big the mountain somebody like him has got to climb relative to the little hillocks that Paul Townend and co. have got to navigate.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that's, well, you know, we're all aware of this. I'm not trying to pretend that this is something exclusive to me. But just over the last few weeks, putting together our 24-pager for Tuesday, just wading through all the Mullins horses. And of course, now, you know, that's come to fruition with Tuesday's decks. And you see in the numbers just like what an advantage they have. And it's even, you know, a weird thing is, Nick, that you and I last week, I think it was, we talked about the passing of Mark Bradstock and Coney Gree, winner of the Cheltenham Gold Cup in 2015. And we talked about how much has changed in the last 9 years with regard to the ability of David still to fell Goliath. And Willie Mullins, 12 months ago, had 6 winners at this meeting. I think that at the time, he wouldn't say this publicly, but I think most of us thought, yeah, that was a bit of an underwhelming figure. If Willie Mullins had 6 winners over the 4 days of Cheltenham 2024, we wouldn't describe that as underwhelming, would we? We'd say that was a bloody disaster.
It is pretty amazing.
Is that not true, though?
I hear you. And I guess there is an extent to which I suppose it depends which the races are. And I said to somebody the other day, do you think he would take 12 over the week in preference to 8 over the week, including the Gold Cup? And the answer came back, no, he'd rather have the 8 plus the Gold Cup than the 12. Of course, this is a kind of ridiculous hypothesis in many respects, I know. But I do think he's someone who understands that not every race is worth the same, either in terms of money or in terms of prestige. He has a healthy appreciation for that.
I agree. I think just another observation on that point. You know, we've been used to over the last few years, certainly from the perspective of the home defence, we've been used to seeing Nicky Henderson not exactly stem the green tide, but he's done his level best over the last few years with, you know, with plenty of grade ones there. But in 2024, and I'm not, and this is completely separate, so let's just assume that the runners from Seven Barrows are in the rudest of rude health. It's still going to be a hell of a job, even for Henderson, to put up that stern resistance that he has done over the last few years. I'm very interested in over the next few days to see how Gordon Elliott gets on. He had that fantastic first half of the season. He was in brilliant form at Down Royal. He was in really good form also at Leopardstown over Christmas, and then pretty much bypassed the Dublin Racing Festival at Leopardstown at the beginning of February. And I'm really interested to see how that policy pays off. I hope personally that it pays off very well for him, because I think a resurgent Gordon Elliott, it would be a good story for racing this week. I know how some media outlets will view it, but I think it would be a good thing.
Well, and indeed, same applies for Henry de Bromhead, who's had a quite enough season in Ireland, but we know the uplift his horses experience when they get to Cheltenham. And I'm interviewing him on Sunday morning for the TV show. He is absolutely loaded with chances again, and he seems to be quietly confident that they're all peaking at the right time. Those comments could apply to a few trainers in the UK, not many, but a few. One of them is certainly Dan Skelton, who's proven time and again that he's very good at getting one right for a given day at the Cheltenham Festival, often in the toughest handicaps of all. He got very close to winning the Imperial Cup on Saturday with Fevoir, the horse who is going to head back to the County Hurdle on Friday in a bid to defend his crown. Skelton, however, has been in the news for other reasons over the weekend. David, we discussed this a little bit on Sunday morning. Tell me exactly why and what he did on Saturday to inform everyone as to how the George Gently case had concluded.
Yeah, briefly, just the background to this. It goes back to 2018 and a complaint made to the BHA. A syndicate headed by the retired insurance underwriting director Tony Holt complained and alleged that Skelton had not revealed he owned a 1/3 share of George Gently when it was sold to them. They allege that Skelton, who denied being a part owner and denies being a part owner, had received a payment of £42,033 from the sale. It's been a long-running case, this. It's been revisited a second time by the British Horse Racing Authority. Now, on Saturday morning, Dan Skelton broke loose with the result of this. He said on X, formerly Twitter, I'm relieved that the BHA proceedings against me have come to an end. This has been a very difficult 6 years, and at times I very much needed the support of those around me, which was unreservedly given and for which I'm so thankful. I've been fined £6,000 and the BHA released this information to me on Thursday night. There is a date amendment to be made in the findings, which is why it has not been released publicly. I simply didn't want to drag this out any longer. And the prospect of a first full night of sleep in 2049 days is a happy thought. I made a couple of mistakes. The independent chair who scrutinised this case has made both reprimanding and mitigating comments about me and my actions that I accept. I felt it was best to bring this to a conclusion as swiftly as possible for all concerned, so I have not challenged the points. The BHA has rightly investigated this matter. However, it has taken far too long and has had its many costs, both financial and personal. Now this matter is finally concluded. I look forward to getting on with the job I love. Now, the BHA on Friday afternoon were upset that Skelton had released this and sort of gone rogue, if you like, before they had actually signed off. The final decision had been signed off. I think they were a bit more conciliatory on Sunday, and the written reasons are given tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, they are. And it'll be very interesting to read those written reasons. I think there is a part of Dan Skelton's statement that is inviting people to read those written reasons quite closely. I suspect that there might be a couple more chapters to be written in this story. The BHA confirmed to me yesterday that the reasons will be issued Monday. And they said, we of course understand why Dan issued his statement yesterday and recognise the toll this episode has placed on all involved, which was significantly more conciliatory, I suppose, would be the right word than perhaps what came out initially. So I think that there's probably some more interesting detail to emerge, and it's something that we'll be covering during the week. But let's have a look at those written reasons first of all. Right, David, we need to press headlong into day one of the Cheltenham Festival with a tip from your good self.
We're going to Dunstall Park, Wolverhampton, for the 7 o'clock race tonight, and it's Bossy Parker, a horse who was a two-time winner for Johnny Murta. Now back to winning form for Stella Barkley over course and distance last time. Still well handicapped, and I think the follow-up is very much on the cards. Wolverhampton, 7 o'clock, seems a fair way, doesn't it, from the Cheltenham Festival on Tuesday. But as long as it pays, number one, Bossy Parker.
See, some of my correspondents would just have gone, no, I'll just do something for Cheltenham. But such is your commitment to the grassroots racing, to everyday racing, to racing of all types, and to the here and now that you have gone to Wolves, for which I can only commend you. Commend you even more if that horse is a winner. We will be back and we will be broadcasting from Cheltenham first thing Tuesday morning. Don't miss our podcast during the course of the week, which will be taking place in conjunction with our good friends at the ROA and Fitzdares. Thank you very much for listening. That was the episode for Monday, March the 11th. Roll on the festival. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the racing app in partnership with Fitzdares.